Hi, this is Alvar Rosima from Jani Hansa Cider in Estonia, and you are listening to Cider Chat.
Episode 63. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Ria Windcaller, and I am your Cider MC and the producer of this weekly podcast where we speak with cider makers, enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. And this week, we are speaking with Alvar Rosima from Jani Hansu, an Estonian cidery. There'll be more on that chat in a moment. In this spot of Ciderville, when we are going live, it is wassail all over the town time. And that is an annual celebration to really set off the new year, celebrate the orchard, get folks out in the middle of the winter. And it is cold here, let me tell you that. Sing some songs and do some classic rituals. And as far as I know, this comes from the UK, this tradition, and there are many tunes to be sung. So I hope that you get the opportunity to celebrate it one way or another, whether you are in the city or in the country. Perhaps you'll find a wee bit of wassail your way. I know in Santa Cruz, California, the Santa Cruz Cider Company is celebrating a wassail event. There'll be a link in the show notes for that. That'll be taking place indoor at a pub in town. And out in the countrysides of some of the orchards here and there, there are wassails taking place. I did attend one this past weekend, not too far from my location. It was at Carr's Cider House. That is a cidery owned by Jonathan Carr and Nicole Bloom. And they did a lovely event. Jonathan said this was their beta wassail, meaning their first wassail. The cidery opened in, I think, 2014. And a big old tip of the glass to them both for putting on such a fantastic time to be had by all. We all met down the hill from the orchard, walked up on the slippery slope, which was a road. I really thank Jonathan for giving me some of those little hand warmer plugs that you put inside your gloves because it was cold out, but so beautiful. And what a beautiful view from the orchard looking out down at the valley. We walked up to the barn, had some hot cider, and then walked outside of the barn where a fire was being lit. And right next to the barn is this beautiful old apple tree. This orchard is something that they're reviving. I would say the tree is about 80 years old. After going into the barn, and I'll have a link to Carr's Cidery on the show notes for this episode number 63, we went outside where there was this large fire taking place, and the king and queen, which is so typical of a wassail, kind of got things going by drinking cider. Then you pour some cider on some toast. In this case, it's white toast that's been toasted. You did hear me right. Then you take that toast and you put it onto the tree. You pour cider around the tree, and we marched around the tree singing songs, sang more songs, drank more cider. It's a nice way to celebrate with friends and family and to wake up the orchard and think about the coming year. A lot takes place in the orchard in the winter. Soon, in these parts, folks will be going out and pruning the orchard and making sure that it's tended to and hoping that there's enough ground cover in the form of, in my area, of snow, and that we don't have too early of a blooming and that doesn't get affected by then a late frost. All these things factor in to get that perfect apple to produce at that perfect time on that tree. All the loving care happens year-round for orchardists who are the stewards of the apple trees. They do so much work starting right up. There's going to be pruning happening out in the orchards, and they make sure that the branches are all kind of pulled away, checking in on the trees, Hopefully there won't be too early of a thawing so that the buds don't start coming out on the apple trees and then might be at risk for a late frost that can really disrupt the apple growing season. Farmers, like orchardists, are really dependent on so many factors that can make or break a year. That's why it's so important to have events like a wassail to really celebrate the orchard, the orchardist, and of course, the apple tree. Like the orchardist, this podcast, A Cider Chat, could also use a little bit of love and celebration, and that could come as easily as a review and rating on iTunes. If you are a regular subscriber, what you'll need to do is go to your podcast app on your iPhone and first go to the search, even if you are already a subscriber. Type in Cider Chat. And up will come a listing of some episodes. Below that, it'll say podcast. You'll see the artwork that says Cider Chat. Grab a glass, join the chat, touch that, and up will come the main page. And it'll say unsubscribe or subscribe. Hopefully you are subscribed. And then there are three bars. One says details, reviews, and related. Touch the reviews button in the middle. And what will come up next is the opportunity to write a review. It's like so quick. It's under 60 seconds to write a review and leave a 5-star rating. Share a little love and wassail away onto your next episode with Cider Chat. In just a short period of time from the release date of this episode, I will be in Chicago. Specifically on February 7th. So let's meet up at the Northman. I'll be there at the Northman, which is a cider bar, at 4:30 p.m. I'm going to be hanging out in the back booth and hopefully chatting with you. I'll be collecting some cider stories, and they will be going live on this podcast at a later date. And I'm in town for CiderCon, which is put on by the United States Association of Cider Makers. And that kicks off the next day, February 8th. It goes to the 9th and the 10th. It's a really well-done event filled with very topical seminars for commercial cider makers. Certainly, cider enthusiasts can attend too. So go to CiderCon. There'll be a link in the show notes. And once that's done, it ain't over yet. And really, throughout this whole time, there is the Chicago Cider Week. So you want to check out on ongoing events happening then. There is a Chicago Cider Summit, and I will be there too all day. Cider Chat will have a table. We'll be talking up the podcast, talking up cider, doing some recording. So please stop on by. Looking forward to meeting you at that event and throughout the week in that amazing city that is on the banks of Lake Michigan. And here's a fun little factoid about Lake Michigan. It is one of the five Great Lakes of North America, and it's the only one located entirely within the borders of the United States. The other Great Lakes are shared by both the U.S. and Canada. They're like having mini oceans in the middle of a continent. And as far as the size of Lake Michigan, it is 307 miles long. That equals 494 kilometers, and it's 118 miles wide, or 190 kilometers wide. And that's bigger than some countries in the world. So it is a big lake, and there's a reason why they actually call it a Great Lake. Next up, we are speaking to a cider maker from Estonia. This chat took place live in September of 2016 when Alva Rosema of Jani Hansu and I were both attending the International Hall of Agala Ciders. You could find out about that event in last week's episode number 62 with Anzu Fernande. I had been wanting to speak to Alvar after having the opportunity to take a ride back into the main city where we were both staying after visiting a cideria out in the hillside of Gijón, a seaside city in Asturias, where the International Hall of Agala Ciders was taking place. To be honest, I knew very little of Estonia, except that it was in Eastern Europe, and so I figured it must be a wonderful place to grow apples. So in this chat, we'll explore both the cider culture, Jani Hansu's cider making, and discover a bit about Estonia itself. So let's all grab a glass and join this chat with Alva Rosama of Jani Hansu in Estonia. Alva?
Yes.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about where your cidery is located? Are you in a small town or in a city?
It's outside of everything. So we're really in a farm. This is a farm in the middle of nowhere, pretty much in the amidst fields. We have our orchard now planting every year, expanding that. We have a lot of space. This is a real sort of farm life.
How much cider are you making per year, and when did you start producing commercially?
We started commercial activities about 3 years ago, and then on a larger scale 2 years ago. So this is only our second larger commercial year, and the first season we are trying to go out from Estonia to expand the exports and see what's out there, really. Mm-hmm. And our sizes, we are now making, so we are actually pressing now juice. So we are pressing this year about 60,000 liters.
That's pretty good. And when you are pressing it, what kind of press are you using for that?
We have a belt press.
Okay. Wow, so you're going in some pretty good production there.
Yeah, that was the largest investment last year. So we switched from the basket press to belt press. Mm-hmm. And it has some extra capacity for expansion if that
Absolutely.
Has to happen at some point.
And has cider been made as a tradition in your country for a long time? Is this something that you would find if you went to any farm that has apples? Are the locals there? Is this something that you would have as a drink at the table?
It's a very traditional thing. The locals call it apple wine. And every house or every other house has always had a small crusher and a small press, and it's been more or less handed over from the father to the son, and then, like, you know, shared with the neighbors. It's because that's Estonia, that's pretty north. Mm-hmm. And then the nature by most standards is quite rough. And one of the very few fruits that actually sort of like that and enjoy that is apples. As it happens, it seems to be a perfect climate for Nordic apples. So they've always been there. The apples always been there. You don't have to care for your orchard or do anything, pretty much. And every other year, there's drowning in apples. There's a national catastrophe every other year in almost every village.
A good catastrophe to happen.
Yes. So, yeah, people have always made wine out of apples, and cider wine. It's more in already like a linguistic issue, not the
I love that.
What's in there. So, yeah, this is a long tradition. But it's always been still at the level of homemaking. So there, the history of commercial size craft cider more or less started with us 3 years ago.
Oh,
so we were the
kidding.
First ones to pick up the apples and trying to sell the cider for others.
Well, that's pretty brave. How did you get into cider making then? Where did your interest kind of peak where you said, okay, there's no other commercial cider maker in Estonia, I'm going to start doing that?
I always admired people who started something like a real production of something, that you end the day with something physical in your hands instead of switching off computer. And I've always worked in investment industry, in the financial industry, and there, I mean, you don't have really not anything physical to show for, even after 20 years. So there was a point, you know, in my life, in our family's life, where one era sort of ended 3-4 years ago, and we had to choose what to do next. And then I thought, you know, maybe this is now, it sort of might be the last chance to do something like that, to start producing something.
And so here you are 3 years later after launching. What has been the reception from the cider drinkers, and who are the cider drinkers in Estonia? If you had like an age range, I don't know if that's a good way to look at it or not, or if it's male or female. What are you finding?
It's definitely female. And as we were the first ones really to start producing real cider made of real apples and you know, press on site, etc., all the cider so far that people have known, or the whole sort of cider culture, was really based on the alcopop like sweet stuff in cans, which we can easily conclude there was no cider culture as such. So from early on, what we decided, we're not going to compete with that industry, the industrial cider industry, which is usually the big brewers. And we'd rather try to make like a giant leap for the whole sort of cider culture, and we try to move it into the world of sparkling wine, say into the world of champagne even. And we're happy to say that the reception has been exceptionally good. So it looks like the people were waiting for something like that. Because in the summer, you know, people like to have something sparkling to drink, you know, take with you to the picnics, etc. And what we tried to do basically is to try to change people's mind and not to take like Prosecco or like a cava or any other sparkling wine, and instead take the locally made sparkling wine out of apples. So our cider.
And since you've launched 3 years ago, have you seen other cideries popping up now? They're saying, well, they're doing it, so let's try it.
Yes, there are two more that have their own site, and then there are a couple that are
they're in the process?
No, they're like the gypsy brewers, so they are using other facilities and do their small batches.
Okay.
So it's starting to take off, definitely.
I like that, the gypsy fermenters that are out there. Is that at non-commercial? Is that what you're referring to? Like
No, they are commercial. They're trying to go out for the market.
Wow. So here you are, you're with your apples, and what I've gotten from you kind of over this event here is that your style of cider making is natural. You're not adding yeast for the most part, right? Is that correct?
Yes.
You're not back sweetening. You're going for like a dry style.
We have different styles.
Different styles. So let's talk about that.
The whole concept, as we were so lucky, if you start anything from the scratch, then you are in a good position to think everything over, have meaning for every move, so you don't have any like a heritage that you are sort of obligated to continue or anything. So we took the whole freedom and we sort of reconsidered every move what we did, and what we decided to do is try to get the apple the apple into the final product as naturally as possible. At the same time, to try to refine and add value as much as possible as well. So we try to make the most refined cider you can do. So the champagne method, long maturation, etc. And at the same time, to make it as natural as possible. So as you mentioned, yes, we're using wild yeast for the primary fermentation. We don't have a filtering machine even. We don't have a forced carbonation machine. We don't pasteurize. So we're trying to use the pressure, the wild yeast, and time.
Your ciders have excellent clarity. So you don't have that kind of cloudy cider at all, and not saying that there's anything wrong with that, but I'm wondering, so the primary fermentation for all your ciders is wild yeast, and then you're doing like a secondary fermentation,
yes,
and kind of directing it that way?
Yes, the classic champagne method. That's the main focus. So we just straight from the press, the juice flows into the fermentation vats. We have 10,000 liter vats. And it spontaneously starts to ferment in 3 days, 4 days, 5 days. It just starts to ferment, and this is, I mean, from one side, it's really nice that we don't have to do anything. Obviously, it's much cheaper. Good yeast, cultured yeast is very expensive. Mm-hmm. And from the other side, it makes it also unique, because this is the yeast that is out there, especially in that village where we are, and on these apples, you know, this year. And you can't replicate that. Even in the next village, it will be slightly different.
Right.
So it adds uniqueness, and it's interesting. So it will be different every year. You have different vintages. It sort of makes it more interesting, and then also the result is more interesting.
So after that primary fermentation, you're not adding anything. You just let it go wild, and you have that local terroir of your site,
exactly.
Which is really, you could taste that in the bottle. And then you're going to secondary. Are all your ciders doing that champagne method, or?
We have another line too, so we make in a small batches of the bottle condition. So yes, we do the bottle fermentation, so the secondary fermentation, but then we don't do the disgorgement and the remouage and the whole process of the champagne method.
So that hop cider that I had, which I think it's really important for listeners to hear, that Alvar is making a hop cider, and on the label it says what hops are being used. So perhaps this year you're using Simcoe, but maybe next year you might try something different. I guess that's up to you, right? You might change that around. And he showed me in the bottle, it's a green bottle on the bottom, there's just a little bit of
Sediment,
and so you might want to pour that a little bit carefully. Some people don't mind shaking that up. It doesn't
exactly.
really matter.
And cloudy cider, as you said earlier, it's there's fine. Nothing wrong. It just adds another dimension to it.
So. Right. And I had a taste of it. It was really delicious, nice balance. So it's exciting what you're doing there, and you're really kind of stepping out of the traditional box right from the gate. I mean, you're doing a traditional style of cider making, but thinking of doing hops, what encouraged you to do that? Was it because you were trying some hop ciders from elsewhere? Or?
There's always a very simple explanation to most interesting things. The hop cider started in the first year when we had almost everything bottled for the second fermentation for the champagne method. Mm-hmm. And then there is this, you know, time when you just wait. There's nothing else to do. Because we've set the minimum time for the secondary fermentation to 6 months. Obviously, it was only because we were so new. Now we're trying to have it at least 18 months. Mm-hmm. But it's still, for all the new products, we keep it minimum time 6 months. It means you will have a window of 2 to 3 months where everything is bottled. It's early spring, there is nothing else to do. So it started to feel sort of boring in early March, and we still had some cider left.
Bored? How can a cider maker be bored? But
no, I mean, everything was bottled. You just watch. It's like watching the paint dry, right? You just wait for this, sure. You know, cider to ferment in the bottles.
Oh, there goes the cider bottle. There you go, Osteria.
So we still had some cider, and I had been reading about hopped cider, because in the U.S. people started to experiment a lot with hops after the, you know, craft beer revolution, which was much earlier than here in Europe. And I just wanted to try. So I went to my craft brewer friends and said, you know, educate me about hops. So they picked three hops. I tried small batches, all three. And then we had a tasting and we picked the one. And it was easy. There was just one very clear winner. And yeah, then we did the first batch. I tried a certain amount per liter, and it somehow I got really lucky, and it worked out well. And we've been doing exactly the same stuff ever since. So this is second year. We've started to export it quite a lot, the hopped cider. So that's been extremely popular.
Well, let's talk about the export. Besides coming and visiting Estonia, where else would you find your cider?
We started the export activities, or the push for exports, in the spring. And that was what we thought last year. The first year is like survival. We'll see how we do at home, and we really try to establish ourselves. And I don't know, for the listeners, Estonia is a very small country. We just have like 1 million and a couple hundred thousand people
there. Let's just stop there for a minute, and because for the geographically misinformed, or, you know, well, let's inform folks where the country is. So if we were looking at the map of the world, what are your bordering countries?
We are at the border. It's Russia.
Okay.
So to the east, it's Russia. We have a long border with Russia, and sad and violent history, obviously, as all the neighbors of Russia. In the north, it's Finland. So there's a Gulf of Finland there, just an hour and a half, sort of, you know, boat ride, ferry ride. And there is Latvia in the south.
Mm-hmm. So the exportation of your cider would be, it's not in the U.S. yet.
It's starting.
Okay.
We have a great partner, and there has been tastings, and it has had a great reception. So now we're working on the labels, and it seems we will start some activities in the northwest.
In the northwest of the U.S. Okay,
that's Seattle.
In Seattle, wonderful. So we hope that you get it to the East Coast too. So we want to make sure we put that dibs in there, and I'm sure the Midwest and Chicago, some of the cider listeners there are going to be thinking of the cider bars that are all in that region too. So we'll probably be seeing your cider coming in 2017, because there's like that label approval and all that. That's
hopefully a bit faster.
Okay.
Hopefully towards the end of the year.
Okay.
But yeah,
for December. Okay.
It's the work in progress, because, you know, from the size of Estonian market, it's you can have a monopoly. You can be the king of the market. You still need exports, and this is it's from some sort of one side. It's hard, but the other side of it. It makes you work harder, because you know you have to get to international market. So from the start, we have designed and developed all the products so that they would be also competitive in the international market.
Right.
That's not easy, because, you know, there are a lot of good ciders. There's English cider, there's French cider out there. So you need to have like unique features. You need to have your own approach.
So besides the U.S., what other countries would you be able to find your ciders in at this point?
The biggest export market now is Finland. Obviously, this is our closest neighbor. We have a very strong like cultural ties with Finland. But we're now also shipping to Ireland. We're shipping to Norway, to Denmark. We have sent a couple of pallets to Hong Kong. To Australia, small shipment at the moment. We are registered with the Canadian LCBO, and there's a, you know, trial shipment has been sent. So we're really trying to work on all the angles, because this is not the mass market cider that we do, and it will always be a niche cider.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't expect ever to send like a container to anywhere. So we need a lot of markets, mm-hmm. really special importers, distributors, special clients.
Let's talk about the name of your cidery. And they'll be in the show notes, there'll be obviously people will be able to see it. And when I met you, you were describing to me where you had received the name and the actual spelling of it and the pronunciation. So let's start from there.
It's called Jani Hanso. And there's a story, obviously.
Excellent. We love stories in Ciderville.
Everything started 16 years ago when I was working in a city, and it started to get really, really rough there. So weekends, weeknights. So what the survival instinct of mine kicked in, and I felt I needed to buy a country house to have a legitimate excuse to leave the city for a weekend at least.
Was this a city in Estonia?
Tallinn, yes, the capital of Estonia. So I decided just one weekend I had to go out and buy a country house. So I did. That was before our EU accession and before we became members of all the international organizations. So the price level of everything, especially in the countryside, was extremely low. It was just 10 years after the collapse of the Soviet Union and the whole farming system. So it's hard to imagine people the speed of the development we've had. So
that
10, 15 years ago.
2000,
exactly.
2000.
No, that was 2000.
Okay.
So I went out and I just bought a really old farmhouse with all the buildings around it and some hectares of land. In year 2000. And then when we started to clean up the house, I just found among rubbish a copper tube. That was the way, you know, people kept the most important documents in history.
Wow.
Sort of rolled in a copper tube.
Wow.
And from there, we then found the whole history of the farm from the start to the sort of recent days, really. All the most important stuff.
Wow.
And it started with a map, which was in fact like a deed for the deal where the German landowner sold the farm to the Estonian guy in 1882. And it's colored and everything original. And what we did, we just scanned off the name of the farm from that map, Jani Hanso. You can't obviously see it at the moment, but it's in the really old script. It has the long German old S in it, etc. So we just, what we did, we scanned it off, and then we sort of later on, we then started to build the story around that. So I'm really sorry, graphic designers, that, you know, there was no revenue for you there. But
well, I think it's an amazing history to come upon. The copper tube, was it buried in the
It was just among the rubbish.
The rubbish, yeah. Just thrown there. Jeez. Now, there was occupation in Estonia, wasn't there?
Yeah, from the from 1940 to 1989.
Mm-hmm.
1990, we were part of the Soviet Union, so we were occupied by the Russians.
Having visited Eastern Europe myself, I noticed that when I went there, that I expected to have a large impact from World War II, but what I've noticed is the occupation really had a big impact on just the people. And it's been a while, it's been about 10 years since I've been there, but I wonder if it's changed. For instance, when I was in Lithuania, I noticed like wearing sunglasses was like something you wouldn't do because it would signify that you had something to hide. And that there was just so much, I don't want to say nervousness, but it impacted the culture so deeply to be a little bit on guard and kind of protective. So if I was visiting Estonia today, what would it be like? And what would be the main airport that I'd be flying into? And is there a tourist sector?
It is. It's actually part of the UNESCO World Heritage. We have extremely well-preserved medieval old town in Tallinn. So this is, and if you've been to, for example, like Bremen in Germany, it is very similar. But it has changed a lot. It really looks really beautiful, and it's really modern, and there's a whole new generation of people. Because we just celebrated the 25 years since the second independence. So it's really modern. You got the skyscrapers. It's very, very different.
Yeah. Now, your English is impeccable, and I noticed that Veronica's English is also impeccable. Both of you have been in the States, in the U.S. Is that correct?
I did my master's in U.K., actually, London.
Oh, U.K., okay. So that's where you really got
I did my master's at the London Business School in 2003.
All right. Well, that certainly makes it easy for me to understand, so I appreciate that. If you were going to say something in your native tongue, and you're going to be doing we would say cheers or salute, how would you say that?
People say hello. It's almost the same.
Hello? As like a cheers?
Yes.
Really? Hello? How do you spell that?
No, it's in the same way. I mean, this is the sort of easiest way. There are the Estonian language, what would people say?
When you're sitting around, is there like songs and all that too? Are people singing or...?
No, not really.
No? Oh, darn.
This is a northern country, you know, it's the extrovert is considered the person.
They need to drink more cider. That's all that's telling me. They need to drink more cider. But you would say hello as hello.
Yes.
That would be a typical greeting. How would you say goodbye?
Head aiga.
Head aiga.
Head aiga. This means goodbye.
Goodbye. Well, I hope that this is Heldaga for now, and that we continue to see Jani Hansu and keep on seeing it reaching out into the global cider market. I wish you the best of luck. I really appreciate you taking the time to speak to all of us on Cider Chat.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
You can find the show notes for this chat with Alva Rosema of Jani Hansu Cidery in Estonia at ciderchat.com/podcast. This is episode number 63. I have to admit, I was thrilled to be able to speak to somebody like Alvar from a country that I really know little about, and then to find out about his cider making and to be able to taste his cider while there in Asturias at that International Hall of Gala Ciders, which leads me to subsequent episodes coming up. We're going to be talking to folks from the Canary Islands, from Portugal, from Poland, from Catalonia, and so much more. So stay tuned and support this chat by going to the ciderchat.com webpage and donating today. There's an easy donate button both on the show notes and on the main page. And you could also become a patron of Cider Chat for as little as $1 a month. And that will give you some behind the scenes goodies to boot if you do that. Plus the excellent feeling that you are supporting content creation on Cider that helps promote it and inform us all. Win-win. Time to roll out of here, Ciderville. Until next week, this is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville. Yeehaw!